Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. There are all kinds of parenting books out there. Now there's one for parents of grown-ups. Did you ever see the movie Jeff Who Lives at Home with Susan Sarandon as Jeff's mom?
One of the shutters on the pantry is broken, and I need you to fix it.
You know, I'm kind of busy right now, so...
All I want for my birthday is for you to get your
off that couch, and you get on the bus, and you
not
go to the Home Depot.
On the couch.
You come home, you fix the shutter before I get home, or you're going to find someplace else to live.
Fine.
Fine.
Good. You got it? Do you understand?
Yes, Mom. Okay.
Love you.
Goodbye.
Susan Sarandon and Jason Segel as Jeff, as in Jeff Who Lives at Home. Joining me now are the authors of a new book called Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. They are Clark University psychology professor Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, director of the Society for the Study of Emerging Adulthood, and Elizabeth Fischel, author of a number of previous books on parenting and other family relations, including Sisters. Maybe you know her acclaimed parenting book called I Swore I'd Never Do That, and Reunion, and as an extra qualification, she has two kids in their 20s. Jeffrey, welcome. Elizabeth, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
Thanks so much.
Does that Jeff Who Lives at Home clip represent something from real life that caused you to write the book?
Well, not exactly. You know, there are a lot of stereotypes about emerging adults. 18 to 29-year-olds is the age group we focus on. And one of the reasons we wrote the book is to dispel a lot of the stereotypes. And that's a good example. There is this stereotype that they're eager to move home and sponge off their parents and do nothing. But that's really false. They move home rarely and due to economic reasons, and they get out again as soon as they can. I mean, it's funny to have a movie that's the extreme case, but it doesn't really represent the reality that most of them experience.
And it's interesting that you say that, because we had no trouble finding TV and movie clips to kind of set up or sprinkle through, you know, this conversation that relate to the themes of your book. And they all seem to have exactly that kind of tension. For example,
yeah.
You ask the question of when to close the bank of mom and dad, as you call it, when to close the bank of mom and dad. And you actually refer to this scene in the HBO series Girls, in which Hannah, age 24, marginally employed, trying to make it as a writer in Brooklyn, has her parents drop the bombshell. So we pulled the scene. Here it is.
You graduated from college 2 years ago. We've been supporting you for 2 years, and that's enough.
Do you know how crazy the economy is right now? I mean, all my friends get help from their parents.
We are sympathetic to that.
But I'm your only child. It's not like I'm draining all your resources. I mean, this feels very arbitrary.
You don't know anything about our finances. I mean, we're professors, Hannah, professors. You know, we can't keep bankrolling your groovy lifestyle.
My groovy lifestyle?
The bills add up. We're covering your rent, your insurance, your cell phone.
You said it was cheaper for you if I was on the family plan.
Yeah.
All right, that from Girls. And tell us, why did you include that in the book? We got that from you.
Right, right. It builds to the moment where she says she was begging them, well, how about just $1,100 a month? Like, that's just peanuts. Well, I think Jeff is right that a lot of these are stereotypes. They're exaggerated for humor. But, of course, there is a grain of truth, and I think we found almost 50% of 18 to 24-year-olds will move home at some point. So it's even though the emerging adults don't want to live at home, and they're usually trying with all their hearts to get out of there, still because of economic pressures and being underemployed and so forth, about half of them do find their way home. And I think for the dramatic tension, that scene needs to play up the fact that Hannah doesn't want to cut those strings. But in reality, and well, for the rest of the series, she does what most 20-somethings do, which is sort of go from job to job to try to find her niche. We found that young people will go through about 7 jobs during their 20s, and, well, we don't know where it will all lead, but she's trying her best to find something that will not only be supporting, but will also express what it is that, you know, her passion.
And Jeffrey,
the money is a legitimate issue, Brian. You know, mm-hmm. That's why we wrote a whole chapter called The Bank of Mom and Dad, because it turned out to be the number one source of conflict between parents and their 20-something kids. So that definitely happens. And a lot of times parents expect that they're going to be done supporting their kids financially when the kids graduate from college. And that often turns out not to be true. We found in a national survey that I directed that over half of the 26 to 29-year-olds get at least occasional financial help from their parents. And parents often aren't expecting that and aren't really crazy about it, even though they're usually willing to provide it if necessary.
And you do seem to recommend in the book, pertinent to that line where the parents say, you don't know anything about our finances, we're professors, that parents do talk about their financial situations with their 20-something children. When do you think that's a good idea and why?
I think usually there's some key moments, particularly at graduation from high school and then graduation from college, when it is important to have a sit-down with your 20-somethings. And you don't have to tell them every detail of your financial situation, but it is important to give them a sense of what you can offer and where they have to step up. If it's about paying for college, then it may be, you know, how much you can contribute and whether or not they have to work or take out loans. And similarly, when they graduate, can you offer to them to come back and for how long? We always recommend setting limits. I mean, will they come back for 6 months? Will it be a year? Rather than just open-ended, which can lead to stress and upset on both ends and that kind of desperation that Susan Sarandon seemed to be expressing. But if she'd said ahead of time, look, you won't be paying any rent, but I would like you to help me with occasional chores like fixing the shutters, then perhaps her son would have been a little bit more motivated.
My guests are Jeffrey Jensen Arnett and Elizabeth Fischel, authors of Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. I wonder if we can get some calls from so-called boomerang kids. If you move back in with your parents after college or after time in the workforce, out of the home, why did you do it, and what kinds of issues has that presented for you and them? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And if you're the parents of those boomerang kids, same question. What kinds of issues has your adult child moving back home presented for you? 212-433-9692. Is it about money primarily? Is it about how much parents can have a say over the hours the adult children keep or the relationships they choose to pursue or who they bring into the house? From adult parent, adult child perspective, or parent of adult child perspective, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Tell your story so that might help some other folks out there. Jeffrey, you've coined this term, emerging adulthood, to refer to the ages of 18 to 29. You even have that Society for the Study of Emerging Adulthood that you created. But is the nature of the group changing? I mean, TV networks and advertisers have been targeting 18 to 34 as a group for decades. Is anything new about your frame of reference?
Well, yeah, it's new, but it's been a gradual change. Really, starting in 1960, there's been a gradual rise in the typical age at which people get married and when they have their first child, and in the proportion of young people who go to college and even get education after college. Those have been gradual changes, but they've been steady. And so by now, the sort of experience that people have in their 20s is really entirely different than it was in 1960. I mean, instead of marrying at around age 20, it really is true that 30 is the new 20. People are a lot more likely to marry close to 30, and the same with when they have their first child. And in terms of their entry to the labor force, it takes a lot longer because so many people are getting so much more education than in the past. So I thought it was useful to think of it as a new life stage now that's in between adolescence and young adulthood. I found that that helps parents and young people understand their experience better and have more realistic expectations for when people are fully going to reach adulthood. It really doesn't take place until close to 30 for most people these days.
Daniel and Tom's River, you're on WNYC. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I went through college. I went through graduate school. I'm actually a doctor, and because of my situation, I wanted to open a private practice. I decided to come back home, and I am currently living at home, and it's not something I'm thrilled about, but my parents really understand my situation, and the fact of the matter is between the insurances that I have to pay for both professional and private reasons, pay for rent is just not something that I can cover with the amount of money that I'm making for the amount of money that I have to shell out each month.
This is a new one to me. So the practice of medicine has come to the point where a doctor trying to establish a private practice can't afford to do that and has to live at home for a while?
Well, I have student loans in the amount of six figures, which is not exactly easy to pay. And, I wanted to come back home for a couple of reasons, one of them being, it's where I'm from, and I do have some name recognition, and I know some people here. And really, I also wanted to come back to support my family, my siblings and my parents, too, just to be able to be present for them, because it's a big time of transition. We had some different issues, within the family, health-wise and otherwise. And, my grandparents are getting older, and instead of being where I went to school, I decided to come back to kind of work through the transition and try to gain some traction for my own practice and then see where it goes from there.
It sounds like you're very close to your family and there's a lot of mutual support. Are there also issues that you didn't expect maybe coming back and living at home?
Not so much that I didn't expect. I mean, I moved to the West Coast to go to graduate school, and when I came back, all the same things that I didn't like were still here, but all the things that I really did like were also still here. So it's definitely a trade-off. There's definitely a balance that needs to be established. And it's really just about having clear lines of communication from what I'm talking about with them and what they're talking about with me. So it's really just about communication.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're a great model for a lot of folks, and good luck setting up your practice, Daniel. Let me go to Jonathan in Monroe. Jonathan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hey, Brian, thanks a lot for taking my call. I love your show. I listen to you every day.
Thanks a lot.
I wanted to just chime in from the opposite end of the equation. I'm 33 years old. I got a job not too far away from where my parents live right now, and because the housing situation wasn't favorable when I was hunting, they invited me to move in with them while I was working. And I was very comfortable there. They were comfortable there. We had kind of a symbiotic relationship. As you guys were saying before about the Susan Sarandon thing, my parents did not charge me rent, but I did help out around the house. And it worked out well. I ended up not leaving until I was about 26, 27 when my then-girlfriend and I got married and we bought our own house. So I thought it was a very fruitful experience, and I felt that the relationships that I was able to build as a more adult person at that time with my parents was very helpful, and the relationships that I was able, or the social experience I was able to gain by associating with them and their friends helped further adjust, I guess, my perspective on life and how I act today. So I thought it was very beneficial.
Really great, Jonathan. Thank you. Boy, Elizabeth, we're getting these well-adjusted callers with these.
We've
heard from America's two only functional families.
No, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I applaud both of them. They both sound as though they were able to balance a rather delicate situation. And one of the things that Jeff and I found is that even though the media plays up all the angst about it, in fact, most of the parents that we interviewed felt, and perhaps this was more looking back on it than when they were in the middle of it, that it was a gift of time and companionship with their 20-somethings or, young adults that probably would never come again, particularly if those people did go on to marry or have their own long-term relationships, and that for the young person getting to know their parents
at a stage of more maturity and for the parents to get to know their grown kids as young adults was a real pleasure. And yes, there were the wet towels on the floor and the forgetting to call when they weren't going to be home for dinner and all of that, but you know, especially in close families that these two gentlemen have described, it really was the pleasures of it far outweighed the downside.
And yet, of course, there are many issues that come up. We have somebody on Twitter who goes by TC's Views, who tweeted us, "My rising college sophomore won't take a 15-minute bus ride to a restaurant job I got her. She lacks motivation to work. What to do?" Which is reminiscent of this clip from Modern Family, where Claire and Phil, the parents, plan to talk to their daughter, Haley, about her ambitions.
Haley has no plan for her future whatsoever. She's living in our basement, taking community college classes and, well, meandering.
So we're going to take her out. We'll have some fun.
And then gently ease her into a friendly conversation about her future.
As opposed to the approach that we've taken in the past.
Is this what you're going to do with your life? Sleep late and take a selfie?
Why are you always criticizing me? Is this really how you want to start the day?
My day started 5 hours ago.
I am under a lot of pressure.
How? How? You take 3 classes a week and you miss half of them.
The parking is tricky.
Morning, sunshine. I saved you some lunch.
I get it, okay? I'm lazy. God!
Scene from Modern Family. If you know that episode, Jeff, it actually ends up pretty positive. But, you know, again, it's reminiscent of this real-life tweet we got that said, "My rising college sophomore won't take a 15-minute bus ride to a restaurant job I got her. She lacks motivation to work. What to do?" So how do you negotiate that kind of thing?
Well, it is difficult. I do think it helps to understand that it takes them a while to decide who they are and what that means for what they want to do. It's awful hard to decide when you're as young as 19 or 20 years old what you want to do with your life, because it really is true that today's emerging adults expect a lot out of work. Most of them don't want to find just a job. I suspect that's what's going on with that restaurant job, that it's something she really doesn't want to do, that her parents are kind of leaning on her to do to help support herself during her college years. But most of them want more out of work than just a paycheck. And so that can be frustrating to parents who realize that sometimes you do just have to take a job, even if it's a job that you don't want, in order to help support yourself economically. And it takes most of them, most of their 20s, to figure out what they really want to do and be able to pursue that in a systematic way. If parents are expecting them to be able to answer that question at 18, 19, 20 years old, they're probably going to be frustrated.
Nandini in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nandini.
Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure.
I am 23. I graduated from college. I live in Harlem. I cannot find a full-time job after 15 months of hunting, and that is extraordinarily frustrating because I was an intern, I worked, and I still can't find full-time work. I have 7 different jobs to try and make ends meet. I walk dogs, I clean homes, I serve gallery openings, and I have not moved back home with my parents. They live in Texas, because that's a bad idea on many levels, and there's no MTA, there's no bus, there's no subway. I have a lot of difficulty, and my parents, fortunately, understand that I want to succeed in this city, and they know that my intended field is just television. They know that that exists here, and kindly they help me out in different ways, and it's still really embarrassing and frustrating and humiliating that I can't find a way to support myself, because you know they're going to retire in 6 to 10 years, and I'm still stuck in this rut where I can't make ends meet, and the loan gentleman from the Midwest don't really care that I don't have a job or I don't have enough jobs. They would still like to be paid, and I have 6 figures just from undergrad or loan debt.
Mm. So Elizabeth and Jeffrey, talk to Nandini.
That's very tough. I when you say your parents will be retiring in 6 to 10 years, I think Jeff and I would both have total confidence that you will be established in those same 6 to 10 years. I think that we found that most of the 20-somethings that we interviewed took about 4 years to find a job that would last
5 years. So mm-hmm. you're not completely, you know, your situation is very difficult. And, I mean, I admire you for staying with it and juggling 7 jobs. I have a feeling that New York is filled with 20-somethings who are doing the same thing that you're doing because they have their dreams, they have their loans, mm-hmm. and they're up against such a tight economy. So, I you know, patience is one thing, and doing whatever you can to keep moving toward your dream, whether it's with other internships or volunteering or, you know, continuing your own education in your field while doing what you need to do.
Isn't that we live in a social media age where it's possible to access what your friends and peers are doing with their careers, and that just makes you feel terrible?
That's partly it, but you remember, I'm sure there are a lot of people in your social media network who are struggling like you are. I mean, statistically, more of them are like you than like the ones who are making 6 figures working for an investment bank. I think what you're doing is admirable. I don't think there's any reason to be embarrassed about it. And I think, as Elizabeth said, it's very likely that within the next few years you will find your way. And keep in mind, too, that, I mean, your parents are supporting you now, and you wish you didn't have to rely on their support. But they're going to need you someday. They're reaching retirement age, as you said. And they probably realize that eventually what they're giving now to you is going to come around. They're going to need your help one way or another as they get older. Almost everybody does. So there's nothing shameful about mutual support in families. I mean, quite the contrary. That's what families have always been about. They support you when you're young, and you support them in emotional or financial ways or practical ways when they get older. And that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing.
Nandini, good luck out there. Sounds like you have a lot of confidence in the way you present, coming from our guests who are expert on this stage of life. So I hope that helps a little bit anyway. I want to play one more clip. And this is not from pop culture, not from movies or television, but from politics. Remember Paul Ryan when he was running as Mitt Romney's running mate in the 2012 presidential election? And he said this over and over again on the stump.
College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life.
So he was trying to blame Obama for the bad economy. But how much of the context of what you write about in this book, mostly advising parents of young adult children, is based on the current economy? I mean, we have a bit of an unemployment epidemic among young adults since the financial crisis in 2008. How far do you want to step back and look at material conditions as setting up the context for these relationship issues that you write about?
Well, it's definitely tough for them entering the labor force in a down economy. You know, it's always tough for young people. Their unemployment rate is consistently twice as high, at least, as the overall rate. And when the economy is bad, the unemployment rate overall is high, it's especially bad for them. But I think it's important, Brian, to recognize that more than ever, a college degree is the best investment you'll ever make. The people who are really struggling in this economy and pretty much every economy are the ones who didn't get higher education and have only a high school diploma to go into the labor force with, because the manufacturing jobs that used to pay a lot of money and mean you could live a middle-class life with just a high school education, those are pretty much gone. And the best new jobs are for the college graduates. And so we need to pay more attention to the people who didn't have that opportunity and don't have those credentials. They're the ones who are going to have a really tough road to go in adult life.
And then there's Sissy from Ohio who wrote on our comments page, my son is 14, and we've already started laying the groundwork for his, quote, launch. You can't wait until the child is 20. So some people are getting ready to expel the child early, or at least give him the tools for independence, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's probably as soon as he leaves, she'll be missing him. And again, she should remember that she's probably going to need him someday. So I wouldn't throw him out the door too abruptly, because it might just come around again.
Jeffrey, Jensen, Arnett, and Elizabeth Fischel are the co-authors of Getting to 30, A Parent's Guide to the 20-something Years. Thank you very much for joining us. Great conversation. I think we helped a lot of people out there.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, another chapter in our series, Prescription for the Bronx. Today, is homelessness a health issue? And if so, should Medicaid pay for low-income housing like a medical expense? Stay with us.